is the NT Country Hour on ABC Radio Darwin and the Northern Territory.
G'day there, my name's Matt Brand. Good to be with you on this Friday lunchtime. Now, if you've gone to your mailbox in the last few weeks and found a package filled with seeds, the federal government's got a warning for you today.
If you see this happening or you receive an unsolicited seed package come in the mail, to report it to us at Biosecurity so that we can make sure that we can investigate it.
Also today, the latest chapter in the backpacker tax saga. Did you see this? The tax is once again lawful. The Australian Tax Office has won its court appeal. I'll tell you more about that in a second. And we head to Borroloola today, where the community is gearing up for its famous rodeo.
We're all pretty excited. Staff here have been saying, is it going ahead? Is it going ahead? And we said, well, we're preparing for it to go ahead. The only thing that'll stop us will be COVID-19.
Yeah, and we're receiving reports this afternoon that potentially billions of people are heading towards Top Springs in the VRD for the famous Pussycat Boar Camp Draft. We'll cross to the Top Springs pub before 1:30. Hope you can stick with us. We are broadcasting right across the territory on ABC Radio, streaming online. G'day if you are tuned in via our podcast. Now, first up today, let's talk about gambergrass. Has there ever been an election in Australia where weed management has been such a hot topic? As Territorians get ready to head to the polls on August 22, all three of the major parties have policies on how to tackle this weed, gambergrass. Let's take a look. Originally from Africa, gambergrass was introduced to the Northern Territory in the 1930s as a quick-growing pasture for the cattle industry. But it soon started to spread beyond the paddock and has now infested an estimated 1.5 million hectares of the top end, including 20% of the famous Litchfield National Park.
It's not just a problem for those living around Litchfield National Park. This will impact the entire tourism industry worth over $2.5 billion to the territory. So this is a big issue for every Territorian.
Millions and millions of dollars has been spent over the years trying to control the spread of this weed, but to no avail. It keeps on spreading. And for those living in rural areas of the top end, this weed has become more than just a threat to the environment, but a serious threat to human life because of gamber's ability to fuel severe fires.
If you see your local volunteer firefighters driving around the place, you'll notice that their trucks are melted, their mirrors are melted because of the heat of gambergrass.
In the lead-up to the Territory election, all three major parties have identified gambergrass as an issue and a potential vote winner, unleashing policies on how they plan to tackle this weed. Territory Alliance says if it's elected, it will establish a gamber control task force, employ a gamber reduction commissioner, and spend $20 million over 4 years bringing the weed under control.
Territory Alliance take this problem very seriously and will respond to it with a serious plan that puts up $20 million over 4 years to ensure that we have the right mechanisms in place.
The CLP says it wants to eradicate gambergrass from all crowned land. And to get that job done, it has a three-point plan,
which involves empowering and supporting our weeds branch to ensure that they can map, track and eradicate gamber on crown land. We will create a gamber management network made up of government and organisations who are committed to mapping and eradicating gamber, and of course work with private landowners.
Meanwhile, Labor says it's been spending $6 million a year on weed management, but is prepared to up the ante and create its very own gamber army.
So today we're announcing $500,000 for a gamber army. That's about 45 positions that will be in place to attack the scourge of gamber in the Northern Territory.
But wait, there's more.
There is more. Labor is also promising to establish a gamber action task force a Gamba Action Program and a Gamba Fire Mitigation Unit. So many Gamba announcements by all three major parties, but is this a vote winner? And is there a clear winner? Yes, let's talk Gamba grass today, Country Hour fans. My question to you this afternoon is, no matter who wins the election, what's the first thing that you'd like to see the new term of government do to try and stop the spread of this weed, Gamba grass? If you found yourself as Chief Minister after August 22, what would you do first to tackle this weed? Join the conversation this afternoon. Our number is 1300 057 222. 1300 057 222. If you were the Chief Minister after the election, what would you do first to tackle Gamba grass? 1300 057 222. Or if you're feeling just a bit shy, you can send us a text, 0487 991057. I'm joined in the studio this afternoon by Mitch Hart, who is from Pew Charitable Trusts, and he also heads up the Gamba Grass Roots Alliance. Can you believe it, Mitch? 2 weeks out from an election, and all three parties have these policies about a weed.
G'day, Matt. First of all, I think it is the first time that a weed issue has been such a central part of an election campaign. And I think that's a result of landholders speaking about homes burning down in Gamba fires, rangers that have seen Gamba slowly overtake landscapes, and Territorians who just understand the scale of this crisis and that swift action is needed. So these commitments are a direct result of all that community pressure over a long period of time. Because the issue hasn't gone away. We've still got Gamba fires right now, and that's why the calls for more action, for more investment, and a plan to actually get the job done have been so strong.
Talk of starting up a Gamba task force, a Gamba network, a Gamba army. In ways, they all sort of sound like the same thing, but can you see any differences?
Yeah, so there are some key differences. There's strengths and limitations in all the party policies. So, for example, the CLP have made a commitment to focus resources on eradicating Gamba on Crown land. And I think for many landholders who talk about the frustration of infestations getting worse behind their block or on the road, this would make a big difference. For Territory Alliance, you know, an announcement of $5 million a year in dedicated funding would make a big difference to people like the Litchfield tourism operators who we were talking to last week, talking about the clear need to do more in Litchfield National Park. Resources are absolutely needed, and that's a strong start. And for Territory Labor, they have a number of practical measures they've outlined, including the fire mitigation assistance vouchers, where the NT government would match landholder commitments to the value of $500. And for example, down in Darwin River a couple of days ago, talking to a landholder who has some mobility issues, this sort of thing would be a tangible bit of assistance for them.
For you, is there a clear winner, a better policy out there?
Well, I think ultimately one of the things that has changed forever is that whoever is in government will not be able to walk away from Gamba action. That much is clear. The community's made it clear that they want more to be done. Voters will make their own choices on Gamba grass and a number of other issues on what they want to see done. But I'm really excited to see all these parties treat this as an important issue as it is. And that's what, for me, is most important.
The question I'm putting to the audience this afternoon is, what would they do first if they found themselves the Chief Minister in a few weeks' time? What would they do first? What do you think should be the first step for whoever finds themselves in power?
Well, I think Territorians can wake up on the 23rd of August knowing that all parties have made increased commitments to deal with Gamba, and that's a good thing. I think anybody who wins has a win-win opportunity here. You know, government can help tackle getting on top of Gamba and also get more Territorians back to work. We've seen the idea of a Gamba army, and that could roll out at a time when jobs are needed the most in some of the places that have been hit the hardest from COVID-19. So we think rolling out plans, getting stuck into the coordination, no matter who wins, and putting some funding behind that fight is the key.
Oh, geez, there are a few things there. We're just after the one thing to do, Chief Minister. Yeah.
Well, I think we need to do those things together. That's okay. Something we hear loud and clear from landholders, from researchers, from rangers, that You need to have more coordination, you need to have a plan, and you need money to back it up. They all go together.
Our number 1300 057 222. What do you think, Chief Ministers? What would you do first to tackle gamba grass? A few texts coming in. Kim in Woodruff says, regarding gamba grass, what about buffle grass in the red centre? I think Kim wants a buffle grass army. Someone else here says, start with cleaning government land and stop passing the cost to neighbours. Do you get that sort of sentiment when you're out in the rural area, Mitch?
Yeah, we absolutely hear that feedback from landholders. I think an inability to get on top of gamba on public lands undermines the ability to get on top of gamba in general. It frustrates landholders, like that texter has just said. It means that people don't think the government's taking it as seriously as they should. So getting on top of gamba on Crown land has to be a priority as part of a broader response.
As far as I can tell, it's the CLP. They're the only ones that have mentioned the E word, eradicate. How possible, really, would it be to eradicate this weed from Crown land?
It'd be a tough job. However, you know, if we're going to get on top of gamba, we have to start and include a strong Crown land response. You know, for example, that a landholder who has that frustration, getting on top of Crown land could then help them get on and help other neighbours as well and not have to worry about the seed spreading through their block. The CLP commitment, you know, would give a clear focus for the efforts to eradicate gamba on Crown land, but it would take a significant increase in resources. And that's really the key across all of the commitments from all the parties. Actually getting rid of gamba will require more people, time and money.
We've got future Chief Minister Tony from Marakai on the line. G'day, Tony. What's your first plan for gamba grass?
Yeah, good day, mate. I was just listening to, and the other day we were talking about, you know, you're bringing in people from Vanuatu to pick mangoes. How are you going to get people to dig up gamba grass?
It's a good question.
Because you've got to do it in the wet deck.
That's a good question. Mitch Hart, he's right, isn't he? We can't get people to pick mangoes.
Mangoes, and it's a lot easier than mucking around with gamba grass.
Good question. Tony, what do you think, Mitch?
Well, I think it is hard work getting rid of gamba, whether you're spraying, whether you're pulling or other control techniques does require a bit of hard yakka. However, right now, we need to get Territorians back to work, and I understand the example that the caller's given, but that's why we need to get training in place, talk about what's required, planning, and then roll out and do it, even if it is a bit of hard work at the right time of year.
What's the gamba like out at Marakai, Tony, where you are?
Just some of it's all right, but my place is pretty good, but you know, there's clumps of it, but a lot of it's on private land, but it's the same thing, it's hard to get rid of. You've only got to leave one clump and it'll be back there again. And the seeds lay in the ground forever, like the old mimosa.
So what would be your plan as Chief Minister, Tony? Have you had a thought?
I still think grazing's the way to go. If you've got Crown land, fence it and put some cattle in there or some buffalo or something. Because that'll knock it down, then you can get in there and do something.
Actually, and going to you, Mitch Hart, often when we talk about gamba here on the country, we get a lot of people calling in saying cattle could actually be part of the solution. What's your thoughts?
Well, in the control zone in particular, grazing is one of the control methods that is used. However, what we do know is that gamba originally got out of control, brought in as a pasture. So the reality of grazing in the top end makes that hard. And in particular, in the eradication zone, we think it's important that it means just that.
Don't bring in a few extra shorthorns and put them in Litchfield National Park?
I think Litchfield National Park requires a bunch of targeted effort. I think the native values and the biodiversity values would mean that would be challenging and probably undermine the very reason that we're looking after the park and put some of that at risk anyway.
Country Hour fans, if you found yourself the Chief Minister, what would be the first thing you'd do to tackle gamba grass? 1300 057 222 is our number. Big thanks to Tony out there in Marakai. 1300 057 222. Can you believe it? All three major parties have got a policy when it comes to gamba grass. And Mitch Hart, in the background to all of this is the public comment period for the, have I got this right, the draft weed management plan for gamba grass. Now, can you just remind us, what is that? What's going on?
Yeah, so that is going on at the same time. Submissions are open until the 27th of August, so right the way through the election period. Whoever wins government will have a nice plan to look at and help guide their efforts. But that is an anti-government document that some experts and community members were part of formulating. It sets out what they want to do for the next 10 years. So what that means is whoever is in power needs to have a plan to get the job done. And that means getting rid of Gamba in places like Litchfield National Park, putting real resources into this good plan and controlling Gamba, and also helping out landholders who are struggling and giving agencies like Weeds Branch and T-Parks the tools to actually do the job.
Right. Would you like to, the results of this, would you prefer to see that drive what the next government does rather than their current ideas?
I think that's an important body of work that should inform whoever takes government afterwards. There's scientists involved in that. There's been land management groups. There's people who are on the ground who have been part of putting that plan together. I think it'd be a real shame if that was completely tossed out, and I don't think that will happen. I think it's a body of work that can help inform whichever government is in place post-August 22.
Mm. Well, it'll be interesting to see. It's amazing to think that these parties obviously feel it is a vote winner, that they need to have something on the table. Otherwise, they obviously feel like they'd lose votes, particularly in Darwin's rural area. So interesting to see how it goes. I think we've got a few chief ministers on the line here, Mitch. Bill's in Noonamar. Bill, if you were the next chief minister, what would you do first?
Mate, I'd do something similar to what they do in New South Wales. They have teams of goats, you know, like 100 goats. They fence it off with an electric fence in a heavily dense area of the, say, gamba grass or blackberry, right? Mm-hmm. And within 4 days, it's gone, mate. You know, they'll get it down to where you can just go in there, control it really easy, poison, whatever you have to do, you know? And you can move them from area to area, and all you have to do is run an electric fence around them.
Yep.
And they don't eat a lot of the native vegetation. So, you know, it's a win-win, mate. Seriously.
If you leave them in there for long enough, they'll eat the whole thing. But, yeah, they have been used successfully in some areas, haven't they, Bill?
They have, mate. You know, and, like, we've never got rid of anything in the territory. Mimosa pigra, they'll tell you it's gone out of the wetlands, but it's covered. There's nothing left of the wetlands. So anything's worth a go, mate.
Thanks for your call, Bill.
All right, mate.
That's Bill out there at Noonamar. I guess, yeah, finally to you, Mitch Hart. I mean, Bill's probably on the money that you have to think outside the box and just do something a bit different, don't we, in the territory. You can't just keep doing what we've been doing because that clearly is not working.
Yeah, I think we need to put everything on the table. We hear from some landholders who use vinegar, you know, they cook the...
Really?
Yeah, they cook it with tinned iron over the top of some small seeds of gamba. So what I'm saying there is there's lots of different things that work at different scales in different landscapes. And whether you're fighting outlying infestations in the eradication zone or you've got a huge chunk of gamba in your block, I think we need to put everything to get rid of gamba and soon. A lot of the key ingredients have been in place for a lot of time.
Yep.
I think the key is funding that fight and putting up the list of priorities post August 22 and get stuck in this wet season.
Thanks for coming in today.
Thanks, Matt.
That's Mitch Hart. He's from Pew Charitable Trusts, and he also heads up the Gamba Grassroots Alliance.
Good day. This is Wayne Quart. I'm the mango growers in NT from Berry Springs, Lamar Lagoon, Acacia, Lake Bennett to Pine Creeks. You're listening to Country Hour.
Our text 0487 991057. Dan reckons we should get some elephants to eat the gamba grass. Well, the grass did come from Africa. You'd reckon elephants probably don't mind a chew on a bit of gamba grass. A few people here saying Bill from Noonamar is spot on. Another text here that says Landcorp and Weeds Branch have done a bit of research on this and suggests it costs $110 a hectare for aerial treatment. $110 a hectare. I haven't got the calculator in front of me, but the estimate is that gamba is across 1.5 million hectares of the territory. That's a big bill. And another text here, no names attached to it, It's always nice to get your name and a rough idea of where you're from. But anyway, I got a text here that says, traditional indigenous burning regimes can not only help eradicate Gamba, but also encourage native regrowth. Cheap, clean, efficient weed control and revegetation based on 60,000 years of knowledge. Our text, 0487991057. Gamba grass, kicking off the Country Hour's election coverage in 2020. We'll be covering a lot of issues over the next couple of weeks and also getting in the primary industry spokespeople for the various parties. I know I've got Terry Mills lined up to come in on Tuesday, Leah Finocchiaro due in next Thursday. We're hoping to lock in Paul Kirby from Labor. We haven't received anything from him yet, but I'm sure we'll fix that out. So if you've got any questions or anything that you want the Country Hour to cover over the next couple of weeks, make sure you get in touch. In a moment, I'm giving you the latest update on the backpack attacks. I thought that story was over, but no, it just keeps on going. An important update this week. I'll share that with you in a moment. But we've got a song request on the Country Hour today. This song request comes from Ian Biggs, who's been on the Country Hour a few times over the years. He's an agronomist at the Katherine Research Station. Today, though, is his last day. Ian's last day there at Katherine. He's actually heading to Townsville, start working with the CRC for Northern Australia. So all the best with that, Ian. Thanks for all of your time on the Country Hour over the years. And here's the song for you, mate. Birdsville by Russell Morris. Enjoy. We'll call it still. Birdsville, song request this afternoon for Ian Biggs. All the best in Queensland, Ian. All the best, mate. It is 5-1 on the Country. I've got more texts coming through regarding Gamba grass. I'll get to them in a moment. But first, I wanted to talk to you about the backpacker tax. Remember late last year when a court ruled the tax was unlawful and was a form of discrimination based on nationality? You remember that? Well, the Australian Tax Office has been successful in its appeal in the federal court, so the tax is once again lawful and it's still in place for working holiday makers. GrowCom's Richard Shannon, he says they're concerned this tax, which is lawful and still in place on top of COVID-19, is just simply going to deter backpackers from working in horticulture, and they just wish it was scrapped altogether.
GrowCom's position on the backpacker tax from the outset was that it was a bad idea. When it was first introduced in 2015, at the time we had what was called a budget emergency, and that backpackers were really identified as a bit of a soft touch, an easy place to raise additional revenue with low risk of any political blowback. And so they were targeted for a tax that we felt was unfair. We are able to attract backpackers to our industry because they had historically not been taxed for that first amount of income they earned, just like an Australian citizen. This tax meant, though, that they would be taxed from their very first dollar, which we had real concerns around it being a disincentive to work horticulture and also to come to our country in the first place. Our position, our preference, would be for there to be no backpacker tax.
4 years ago, 5 years ago, when this tax was first introduced, as you said, it was a budget emergency, had no idea that we'd now be 5 years later in a pandemic. COVID's obviously, with borders shut, a big enough deterrent, and people aren't actually able to come here, and a lot of backpackers have gone home. Is there concern that the backpackers who are staying and currently working will be deterred further from because of this tax?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's for those who are still in the country now, but going forward in the years ahead, it's competitive to get backpackers to this country. I mean, yes, we're a great tourist destination, but a large part of the attraction of Australia was the ability to work and to earn money while you're here and extend your visa over time by working in horticulture. That all sort of was tied up into a package that was very attractive. So the more that we sort of unpick that package, the harder it is to attract people to the country in the first place. So, yeah, it's just another disincentive. Our preference would be, as an industry, to employ Australians. But the nature of the work, requirement to be mobile and move around as the harvest season changes means that we do ultimately end up relying on backpackers. So we need to be treating them fairly.
Now, what was the advice from the ATO when they launched the appeal? Because obviously it left businesses not knowing whether or not that they should be making sure that this tax is taken out or not of their employees' wages.
So when the last appeal that was successful that found the tax was illegal, the advice from the ATO immediately was that employers should continue taxing as though the backpacker tax were still legal, pending their own appeal to the full court of the full bench of the federal court. Their advice was continue collecting the tax because we're going to appeal it. Turns out they've been successful, and that's probably been good advice. As far as we're aware, employers, growers have been continuing to apply the tax to backpackers. And so I think on balance, that's probably been good advice from the ATO because, as we've seen, they've been successful.
So all those backpackers hoping to get that refund, it doesn't look like it's going to come their way anymore, does it?
No, that door seems to have shut, although there are obviously higher courts in the land than the full bench of the federal court. So it remains to be seen whether this decision will be appealed by those representing backpackers. The different treatment of backpackers and domestic workers, it seems unfair that there should be two rates of pay essentially for exactly the same work, people working in the same field side by side. It doesn't create a great work environment where there are different rates of pay for the same work. It creates another, I guess, management problem for growers where you've got that differential treatment of the same workers.
That's Richard Shannon, who is GrowComm's Policy and Advocacy Manager, speaking there to Megan Hughes. It is now news time on the ABC. I will get to your Gamba Grass text messages straight after it. So I'll catch you back here in five, hey?
G'day, how you going? It's Leo Skliros here, President of the Northern Territory Mango Industry Association, and you're listening to The Country Hour.
Matt Brand with you on this Friday afternoon. We kick the show off with a special look at Gamba grass. And can you believe it? Heading into election, all three major parties have a policy on weed management. Has it ever happened before? Alex in Alice Springs, the historian, there's one for you. Has there ever been an election where weed management has featured so heavily? The question that I put to you, Country Hour fans, was if you woke up in a few weeks' time and you were the Chief Minister, what's the first thing you'd do to tackle this weed? Some of the comments coming through. One person here says, oh, it's Trisha in Tiwi, sorry. Trisha says, add a new Zone B plus, progressing to be eradicated, increasing the areas that are clear. Zone B is too big, says Trisha, and needs carrots and sticks to push more effort. We have a plan to move all to Category A full eradication with real funding, not the pathetic effort since they knew it's a horror story in the early 90s. Thank you for that, Trisha. A few people like the idea of getting goats. Who was that? Was that Bill in Noonamar who told us to get goats? Someone else says, yeah, and then you could sell the goats afterwards. Win-win. Someone's not keen on goats, but they're keen on cattle. They say, Matt, regarding Gamba, supply fencing, couple of calves per block, and stop mapping the grass. They've been doing that for years, says Jed. Our text here at the Country Hour. Tell me, in the last few weeks, has anyone listening received a package in the mail? It's addressed to you. You open it up and there's seeds in there. Has that happened to you? Apparently around Australia, just in the last few weeks, it's been happening quite a bit. And it's got the Federal Department of Agriculture very nervous. I'll tell you more about that in just a moment. And if you've gone to the mail and received a package like this, gee, I'd love to hear your story. 1-300-057-222 is our number. 1-300-057-222. Let's go to the Weather Bureau now. Ange Prasad is there this afternoon. How are you, Ange?
I'm good, thanks, Matt. How are you?
I am well. Some rain gauges in the Territory recorded a spit in the last 24 hours?
Yes, Gurdon Springs had 1.2 millimetres, Alice Springs 0.5, Todd River at the Schwartz Crescent had 0.5. So, yes, generally a millimetre, but on average, sort of with the last rain event or the rain event that has just finished, we generally, in our rain gauges, we got up to 9 millimetres. In a couple of places. Hermansburg was one of them. We also looked at satellite rain estimates, which was a little bit higher, more at 10 to 30 millimetres. But that because it's a satellite estimate, it might be more sort of smoothed out.
Yep. So we don't have any warnings out today. What about across the course of the weekend? How's it looking in the Territory?
The weekend is actually looking pretty good in the north. We have got a drier surge heading our way. So it's already arrived in Darwin. Today, the temperature in Darwin did fall below 20. And that takes our total nights so far this dry season up to 40 nights now. So still traveling at average, sort of average number of nights now. Tomorrow, with that drier sticking around, we do expect cooler nights compared to last night, for example. So tonight is going to be cooler than last night across most of the areas across the top end. We saw large areas of fog over eastern top end and also in Darwin. It's very rare. We get it about maybe once or twice a year. So we had fog roll into Darwin this morning, which was quite spectacular. Now with this dry,
it was quite thick, wasn't it? I know. Yes, I know. Our family was on the balcony having a bit of a squiz at it. It was quite something.
I know. It's very rare to get fog like that in Darwin, and I have cycled through fog in Darwin. It's just such a wonderful experience. It's very eerie and quiet, and don't wear glasses when cycling through fog.
got a bit wet and a bit fogged up, did it?
Yeah.
I was actually chatting to a bloke the other day. He said he was fishing out near the Perrin Islands. Heavy fog out there until about 9 o'clock in the morning. He said it just hung around.
Yes. So fog is quite prevalent during the dry season, especially over the Arnhem District and the Carpentaria District, but also happens over the western parts of the Daly District as well. So over the Cox Peninsula, the western parts of Lichfield through the Daly River system and all the way down to Wadai. So it tends to be a bit more prevalent, you know, in more swampy areas where there is low-level moisture overnight. And if the winds pick up before the fog evaporates, it does roll into the sea. So we tend to see sea fog as well. The sea fog is more prevalent off MacArthur River, sort of in the southwest Gulf of Carpentaria, but does happen in the JB Gulf, in the Joseph Bonaparte Gulf as well.
He said we could expect slightly cooler nights, not as cool as those living at, is it the Wilpena Pound? So there's videos out at the moment of snow in the Flinders Ranges of South Australia. Snow!
Yes.
Holy smokes.
Yes, I was looking at some of the temperature records broken in South Australia for yesterday. Port Augusta, it's a annual record, his new annual record was 8.7, the previous was 10. Moomba was another place that broke its annual daily record. So, you know, very low temperatures with this cold spell, with this cloud band that's moved through central Australia and is now affecting a broad area of the eastern states.
Anything else we need to be aware of, Ange?
We are expecting elevated fire dangers over the northwest top end tomorrow due to the drier conditions. It'll be a little bit windy. Down south, it will be a cold night and a mild day tomorrow. There is some cloud that is hanging around from the cloud bend across the Simpson and Lassiter. That should clear tomorrow, so getting a bit patchier by the end of the day. The humidity does come back in the north from Sunday, but it'll still be great camping weather if that's what you're planning. The days will be warm, though, but overnight it will be quite cool. Coastal waters, tomorrow the winds will be a little bit less compared to Sunday, but we do expect a little bit of fresher winds, especially through the southern Gulf of Carpentaria and the southern parts of the Joseph Bonaparte Gulf. The winds will get fresh off the north coast in the Arafura Sea on Sunday. These fresher winds will generally stay offshore, though.
Okay. Thanks so much, Ange. You have a lovely afternoon.
You too. Bye-bye.
Ange Prasad there at the Weather Bureau. A few more comments coming in regarding gamba grass and how to tackle it. Jez says, you should speak to someone from Charles Darwin University who are constantly doing studies and research into this problem. They have science behind them and some fabulous people who know what they're talking about, not guesswork, says Jez. Another text here that says, g'day there. I'm not anti-farming, but a lot of these big problems like gamba and toads come from quick fixes for farming. Dumbest idea ever. Gamba seeds blow everywhere. Says someone on 0487 99 1057. And a text here from Alex. He says, Matt, gamba grass has been recognised as an environmental problem only fairly recently, in that gamba grass was actively researched, promoted and seed supplied by the government even in the 1980s. As ever, says Alex, it's the interests of residents of the top end that take priority over the rest of the Northern Territory. Environmental issues in other regions don't get paid adequate attention simply because the votes aren't there or can be taken for granted, says Alex in Alice Springs. You can join the conversation. Our text 0487 99 1057. I was also keen to know from you if you've actually looked at these three gamba grass policies that have been put out by Labor, CLP, Territory Alliance. Is there one that really sticks out for you? Like, is there a clear vote winner in all of that, or does it just all look a bit the same? I was intrigued to see if you feel there is a clear winner in all of that. 0487 99 1057.
Hi, my name is Trent McDonald and I'm from Arena Station.
Hi, my name's William. I am William Tutu and I'm from Kicks in the Park.
Hi, my name is Lynn and we live out of town.
We are listening to the Country Hour.
Quarter past one. Now, it hasn't happened to me, but maybe it's happened to you. Unsolicited packets of unidentified seeds are turning up in people's post boxes right across Australia, prompting warnings from biosecurity officials. Authorities are concerned that the unwanted seed packets, if opened, could spread noxious weeds, plant diseases, even invasive pests. Dan Fitzgerald has the story.
Imagine opening up your post box, having a look through your mail and finding a small packet of seeds that you didn't order. You're not sure what they are or where they came from.
We're seeing a few cases of unsolicited seed packages arriving in people's mail that they obviously hadn't purchased or ordered.
It's a strange phenomenon that was first reported in the US last month, prompting all 50 states there to issue warnings. And it's now spread to Australia. Emily Canning is the head of biosecurity operations at the Department of Agriculture.
So far, we've seen a few packages come in that have been reported coming from China, Malaysia or Taiwan and destined for some states such as Queensland, Victoria, South Australia and WA. It's been happening overseas and we wanted to get some information out to Australians to say if you see this happening or you receive an unsolicited seed package come in the mail to report it to us at biosecurity so that we can make sure that we can investigate it.
How many have been rocking up?
Well, in general, we see a large number of seed consignments coming in each year anyway, like 65,000 seed packages coming in a normal year anyway. At the moment, we've only seen a handful of unsolicited ones, but we just wanted to remind people about seeds in general. One, whether you're getting them unsolicited, so i.e. that you didn't purchase them, and two, just in general, we're anti-importing of seeds unless you've got a proper permit and that you've declared it and got it approved by us first.
As for the motivation behind why someone would send packages of seeds to random locations, the Department of Ag is yet to come up with an answer. But biosecurity experts in the US have suggested they could be part of a tactic in which online retailers send out unsolicited packages and use those fake sales to improve their online ratings. Regardless of the motivation, the Department of Agriculture is warning Australians not to plant or even open any unwanted seeds received in the mail.
So a lot of seeds that come in from overseas do carry pests and disease, and we're really trying to minimise that coming into Australia and infecting, you know, your garden crops in your backyard, your veggie gardens, and even now commercial farmers and producers of fresh produce. So we really try and encourage people not to buy seeds from overseas so that we can stop those harmful pests and noxious weeds and things like that coming into the country.
If people find a random seed package in their mail, what should they do with it?
Yeah, that's right. So give us a call at the department. So our website is awe.gov.au, or you can call us 1-800-798-636 and let us know if you've received one of these packages.
That's Emily Kenning, the head of biosecurity operations at the Federal Department of Agriculture. I wonder if we've had any of these unsolicited packets rocking up in the Northern Territory. It's 19 past one. You are tuned into the Country Hour. There's excitement building in Borroloola. I'll tell you about it next.
This week on Landline, the New South Wales coal seam gas fight with billions of dollars at stake. And if a picture's worth 1,000 words, is Wagyu meat worth 800?
Consumers already think that Australian product is amazing. Let's get on board and try and describe what our point of distinctiveness is in Australia. Describe it and communicate that to the rest of the world.
That's Landline, 12:30 Sunday on ABC TV.
Now, because of COVID, there hasn't been any rodeos in the Northern Territory yet this year. We've seen camp drafting, we've seen horse racing, but no rodeos until now. The Borroloola community is buzzing after receiving the green light from government to go ahead with its much-loved rodeo next week. It'll kick off next Thursday if all goes to plan. Rodeo organiser Annette Bradford says the whole town's been chipping in to get the grounds ready.
We're all pretty excited. Staff here have been saying, is it going ahead? Is it going ahead? And we said, well, we're preparing for it to go ahead. The only thing that'll stop us will be COVID-19.
Now, how are preparations going?
Absolutely fantastic. We've had the local mine guys actually out there doing a lot of work. They've stripped back and repainted the arenas. They've done yard work on there. We're getting an electrical upgrade. It's all looking pretty smick.
What are the mine guys doing out there?
Well, they've been based in town due to the COVID-19, and they've been out there. The first few guys came out and just attacked, spent 3 days just whippersnipping the area. Then they came out and they stripped and painted back the arenas because it had been painted for 8 years and it rusted quite badly. So they prepped it, repainted it, so it's gleaming out there now. So they're doing really well.
Fantastic. And that's because they're not working because of the COVID situation.
Yeah, they've been really proactive in working in town. They've done work at the cemeteries, parks and wildlife, the church, tidying up different old people's places, working with our learning on country children yesterday or the day before, chopping firewood for the old people. So that's good.
And on the rodeo, it's a pretty important fixture in this community's calendar. So I'd imagine, you know, what's the feeling around town that you're not losing it this year like some other places have?
We're grateful for the timeline that we are able to conduct it. And, yeah, we've lost our fishing comp and NAIDOC's been put off, so we're really pleased that it can go ahead at the correct time of year, and we expect to have a great lineup.
Yeah. And anything special on this year? Anything particularly exciting?
No, I don't think we have any new events, but we're expecting a fair bit of local enthusiasm, And, of course, it'll be territory's own because we can't have the outsiders from the other states coming across, so it'll be pretty fierce amongst all of us.
Homegrown rivalry.
Yeah, oh, definitely. All the drafts that have been held in the territory so far have been pretty strongly participated in. There's been high numbers, and we're expecting no different for us.
And Annette, I'd imagine, you know, organising a mass gathering these days would bring its own unique challenges. Have you been coming up against them?
Oh, COVID plan, yes. COVID plan, and this year we will not, because of that, we will not be having a bar at our venue.
No bar at the Borroloola Rodeo?
No bar at the Borroloola Rodeo, no, because it's just too crowded.
Yeah.
So in the interests of our audience being able to actually spread out a bit more, yeah, we were decided to forego the bar.
Well, it's all right. You don't need a bar to have fun at the rodeo, surely?
Oh, when you've got bulls, dust, cowboys and a screaming crowd, you're having fun anyway.
Good stuff. And how are you going with it all? I mean, I'd imagine, you know, a couple of months ago, it mightn't have looked like it was going to go ahead.
Yeah, well, we were all pretty worried about it for a while, I guess, for the impact of on the events and the town, but we've had a really good our president, Chris, has got a good team there working on trying to get the program all tweaked up, and our sponsors have been absolutely fantastic. So everyone's really throwing their support behind it. So it's really good. It's just got to happen.
And after being locked down for months and months, not being able to have anyone in or out, it's probably going to be a bit of catharsis.
Yeah, I think everyone's really looking forward to the opportunity to let their hair down.
Thank you, Annette.
No worries. Thank you.
Yeah, big thanks to Annette Bradford from the Borroloola Amateur Race Club. The rodeo, it's on next week, ladies and gentlemen. So the dates you need to put in the diary if you want to head out to Borroloola. It all kicks off on the Thursday, August the 13th through to August the 16th. The Borroloola Rodeo, how good is that? It's 24 past one on the country hour. Let's head out to the Victoria River District now, because the famous Pussycat Boar Camp Draft has got underway this afternoon. Joy's out there at the moment, out near Top Springs. How's it all looking, Joy?
Yeah, look, it's looking fantastic. We've got an incredible roll up here this weekend, probably one of the biggest events we're ever going to host here. Everybody was keen as mustard. Yeah, and we've had record nominations come through for this weekend, between the camp drafting, challenging and rodeo.
Ah, you've got a rodeo on as well.
Yep, yeah, we've got a rodeo there on Friday night and Saturday night.
Would that be the first rodeo of the year for the Northern Territory?
It is. And due to conditions and all the rest of it, we had to restrict numbers. So as you can imagine, those spots filled up very quickly. But yeah, no, everybody's pretty keen to get on and have a bit of fun.
I had a mate from the VRD message me weeks ago saying, geez, have you heard about Pussycat Boar? Apparently nominations are through the roof. How many did you get in the end?
We've probably come down. We've had a few scratchings. You never like to say that's a good thing, but it gave us a bit of breathing space this year. Yeah, we had about 1,500 first round nominations to start with, and we've now probably kicked the weekend off with about nearly 1,200 first round starts.
Holy
smokes. That's still enough to get through, yeah.
Whoa. You'll need 4 days out there at Top Springs. 12.
We run over 4 days. So our challenge runs on the Thursday. It's all just challenging on Thursday. And then Friday, Saturday, Sunday is just solid camp drafting and then rodeo at night.
Wow. Now, so 1,200 nominations. Are these all Territorians or have we seen a few people come from interstate?
No, so we were pretty strict when we put our nominations out that we didn't have many interstates because we weren't sure where we were at with COVID. There's a couple of people now that sort of came across out of Western Australia, but they're stationed sort of in the territory as well. So,
I know what you mean.
But yeah, that is just all Territorians, and yeah, a lot of station people have to go, which is fantastic.
1,200 nominations. You need a lot of cattle to get this thing done. Who's chipped in and supplied and donated?
Yeah, look, you can never thank your cattle sponsors enough for this sort of thing. So TPC came on board this year, which was fantastic. We managed to get some cattle on their way from Carlton Hills up to the floodplain. So we can't thank them enough. And then Mullaloo are a very long-time sponsor of ours for donating cattle. And once again, they have donated a little heifers for us to run.
Beautiful. And what are conditions like out there? How's the weather?
It's pretty good. Pussycat can be a little bit notorious for... for a pretty big wind coming up. By Sunday, we all have a very nice two-pack paint of dirt on our faces. But no, at the moment, she's actually quite a lovely day. It's stayed pretty cool and the breeze has been a bit nice to us, so it's good.
Beautiful. And actually, just looking at the NAFI website, the region's thankfully looking very free of fire at the moment, which is great.
Yeah, no, it is. We've been pretty lucky at the moment that we haven't had too much, touch wood. We don't want to have fun, but no, we've all had a pretty good year, which is good because it's been a big year for everyone. And this particular event, it's very special this year. It's a 10-year memorial for a young man that was tragically lost here 10 years ago. He worked on Monadini Station where Pussycat is. Mm-hmm. So it's a very, this is purely focused on Fleetwood this year. And yeah, we can only hope that we do him and his family proud.
We wish everyone out there the best this afternoon and over the course of the weekend, Joy. That might go down as one of the biggest camp drafts the Territory's seen. Those numbers are massive.
Yeah, no, she's certainly a big show. And we just can't thank everyone enough, like the volunteers and the sponsors and just everybody that chips in on the weekend and all the rest of it. It's without those sort of people, these things don't happen. So we just are so thankful for everyone and just hope that we can give everyone the bit of a letdown that we all need after the year we've had.
Yeah. Hey, thanks so much for your time, Joy. All the best.
Thanks very much for that, hey. Thank you.
That's Joy Kane out there at the Pussycat Boar Camp Draft and Rodeo over the course of 4 days. And can you believe it? Initially had 1,500 noms. That's scaled back to 1,200 nominations in a Northern Territory camp draft. Unbelievable. Best of luck to all the competitors. That is massive. Hey, jump in the truck and head down the VRD, I say. That will be one hell of a show out there near the famous Top Springs Hotel. That wraps up today's Country Hour. We've had a big one. Plenty to talk about. And we will do it all again on Monday. I'll catch you back here at 12:30. Keep it rural.